Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Burnoutology, the podcast. This is our final podcast of the year, which I know feels a little bit early, but I am switching off today to enjoy a very lovely Christmas with my family and friends. Starting though in 2 days' time with my sons, it's going to be their birthday on Thursday. They're going to be 25. I cannot believe that this week I am the mum of 25-year-old twin boys. And I've there's a blog. This week's blog is, I don't know if I'd necessarily call it a dedication to my sons, but this week's blog is a reminder, I suppose, a bit of a throwback to the day that I told my sons I was going to be fine, I'd be back at work soon. This was after burnout number one. And my sons looked at me, looked at each other and said, but mum, we don't want you to go back to work because your job is killing you. I'm talking about all of that in this week's blog. That will be live on the website and over on LinkedIn and Substack this Thursday. So if you haven't already, by the time you listen to this, if you won't have seen it, that will be live depending on where you're listening. Today, I want to talk a bit about identity and what happens when our identity becomes so entrenched and so ingrained in where we've been, right? In the job title, in where we've been, that we can then forget that we can create who we want to be to allow us to create where we want to go. Now, I know we've got a mix of you that listen to this. So maybe you are somebody that is in the depths of burnout and you're thinking, well, there's absolutely no way I can get to where I want to be. Maybe you have experienced burnout yourself and you're starting to come through the other side. Or maybe, as I know a number of you are, maybe you're just a curious coach that wants to understand a bit more about burnout and what you can be doing to help your clients. So hopefully, as always, I hope today's episode will be useful in giving you some of that information and helping you to unpick some of this stuff around identity. I did also a couple of weeks ago in the blog, did an article about our identity and how identity can like play such an important part in burnout recovery, right? And how our loss of identity can get us to burnout in the first place. So again, please do go and check that out. Hopefully you'll find that useful. Maybe you didn't even know there was a blog, but there is every Thursday. So these podcasts come out every Tuesday and the blog comes out every Thursday. This is Burnoutology. And this is uncut, unscripted, unedited. So maybe there is background noise. Maybe there are ums and ahs and oohs and pauses, and maybe I lose my words and maybe I lose my chain of thought. But this is my permission slip to let go of perfection. For many, many, many years, my perfection was, my quest for perfection really was driven by this need to feel like I had to keep proving. I had to be good enough, knowledgeable enough. I had to be the best. I had to be the best performer. I had to be the high performer. I had to be the high achiever, because a lot of my own identity, my own feelings of self-worth were tied up in everything that I was doing for everybody else or the grades. You know, I was moved up a year at school. I'm the eldest of three, and I was big sister. I had, you know, by the time I was 3 years old, I had a younger brother and a younger sister. I was big sister very early on. I had to learn that it was about them and looking after them. And I was moved up a year at school and I was in all of the top sets and I needed to keep performing and it was all about the grades. And then when I got into work, it was about being the best. And I was one of the only ones to complete a 2-year program that I was on. I was the only one during those 2 years to get pay rises over an 8-year period. I had 7 different promotions over that same 8-year period. I added over £100,000 to my salary. I was the problem solver. I was the friend that people wanted to help solve problems. I was the family member that if something needed doing, Kelly was going to be the one to fix it. When I started my business, I was the one that everybody wanted to pick brains of. How do you do this? How do you do that? Can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? Just kept achieving and achieving and achieving. And when it came to first thinking about this podcast, all of the reasons as to why I couldn't do it, right? All of them, because it would need editing properly. I'd need to invest in a proper studio. I'd need to invest in proper sound. I'd need proper editing. I'd need proper lighting. I'd need the right, intro music. I would need all of the branding. I'd need a different name. I'd need somebody that was going to take hold of it for me. I'd need somebody to do the marketing. It became so overwhelming. Actually, I want to do a podcast. Just do the bloody podcast, right? Find a way of making it your own. But even with that intro, I suppose my first question for you today is, how much of what I've just said can you relate to? How much of that has also become tied up in your identity? How many of you feel that everything has to be perfect? Because if it's not perfect, then like you're just going to be the biggest failure on earth. How many of you don't allow yourselves to just kind of show that like good enough is good enough? What would good enough look like without it having to be perfect? What would saying the thing in the meeting look like without thinking that it needed to come out perfectly? What would showing up on a video look like without thinking that you have to do it perfectly? How many of you have created this identity of always getting it right, of always being the top performer, that actually it stops you maybe sometimes allowing yourself to go at things with a bit of a beginner's mindset? How many of you are too terrified to take the step or try the thing? Because what if people judge? What if it goes wrong? What if you're not good enough? I hadn't realized until I began to start giving myself permission to let go of perfection just how many things I have not done or had not done in my life, because it was like, well, if I can't do it perfectly, I'm just not going to do it. If I'm not going to win, there's no point doing it. If I'm not going to be number one, there's no point doing it. If I don't know what I'm doing, like, there's no point doing it. And yet if you'd have spoken to me, you know, kind of fixed mindset, growth mindset, and a bit, oh my God, growth mindset, yeah. I want to keep learning. I want to keep growing. I'm always looking for solutions. I'm always trying to find this work. And yet, there is a huge part of me. You just said to me, like, you know, do you fail? No, I don't fail. But the only reason I wasn't failing is because I never did the things that I thought I'd fail at. And that had become part of my identity. And I had this day after burnout number one. I was a few months into my consultancy. Only a few months. I'd got networking. I'd met this woman, and she worked for a big bank. And she asked me if I would go and do a talk to part of their women in leadership cohort, speak at this event. And I've been speaking on stages for years internally and at some lots of kind of sector events. And so I thought, yeah, like this is going to be brilliant, right? This is a way to get my business out there. It'll be my first big stage, having, you know, kind of not long started my business. It's going to be amazing. And I'm driving to this event in the morning, and I have to pull my car over, start having a full-blown panic attack in the car. And so I pull over into this lay-by. I'm not even 10 minutes away from my house. And I can't sort my breathing out, and I can't stop. I'm just a mess. And I said, look, maybe I should tell them that I've got a stomach bug, I've got food poisoning, my car's broken down. I can't catch my thoughts. I can't catch my breath. Maybe I should tell them one of my sons is ill. No, I don't want to wish that on my sons. Like, oh, I could tell them the boys have got a stomach, but maybe the boys had a stomach bug and now I've got a stomach. Like, I don't know. But just I can't. And where I got to, whilst I sat in the car, the reason that I was feeling this way wasn't because I was worried about getting on stage. I'd spoken on stages many, many times before. Even, you know, I always kind of joke like one of the world's biggest introverts. And yet, standing on stage is one of my happy places. I don't get worried about it. I don't get particularly nervous about it. I get excited about it. I've learned that it's being on stage isn't about me. It's about the audience. But on this particular morning, I couldn't get myself in that headspace. All I could think about was, who's going to care what I have to say? Because although I'd been invited, this woman had seen something in me to say, we want Kelly to come and speak at this event. I had like the biggest keynote slot of the day to go and deliver to this group. There was something in me that she thought, yeah, we want you to be able to do this. And yet, as I sat in the car that morning, panicking in this lay-by, less than 10 minutes away from my house, it was because I didn't feel enough. Because who would want to hear from just Kelly? Because I was no longer Kelly, the HRD from the big brand company with the big salary and the big, you know, kind of tailor-made suits. And, you know, I wasn't that person. I wasn't dressing like corporate me anymore. I didn't feel like corporate me anymore. And yet, who I was a few months into starting my business, less than 6 months after that first burnout, who was I if I didn't have the big job? Who was I if I wasn't an exec level HR director? Who was I if I didn't have that big brand behind me? Because I didn't feel enough. Nothing about me in that moment felt enough to get on stage as just Kelly. And we see this not just with burnout, right? We see this when people are made redundant, if people lose jobs at short notice, if people retire, if people want to take sabbaticals, if people think that they want to change. But for a lot of us, our identity becomes so entrenched in the job title. And if we think about it, even with my nieces, my youngest niece is, you know, kind of 5 years old. And for years, family and friends have been asking her what she wants to be when she grows up. That's what we focus on. Right? What do you want to be? Not who do you want to be, but what do you want to be? And when we start to focus on that what, we pay all of the attention goes into the what. And this is one of the reasons that I struggled for so long, I think, when it was very clear that it was this burnout stuff that I needed to do full time. It had been, you know, it'd been the side hustle. It'd been part of the, you know, award-winning multi-six-figure people and change consultancy that had started when I came straight out of corporate. But in order to really step into it, and that's you know, I suppose, whatever you kind of sum up, but gut feel, which is like, this is what I need to be doing. This is what I'm meant to be doing. This is what I'm here for. And yet, from an identity perspective, because the whole bloody world, right, gets sucked to like, who are you? What do you do? Like, what's your job title? What do you do? What's your job title? What do you do? I've even tried registering for some events and not wanted to put a job title. You can't even register for some events until they've seen your job title. So it's probably no wonder that our identity becomes into the what we do, right? The what we are, not so much who we are, but the what we are. Are you a director? Are you a founder? Are you a coach? Are you a mentor, a counsellor, a therapist, a teacher, a doctor, a what? Right, it's that it becomes a huge part of our identity. But I didn't know the what. I knew the how. I knew it was the coaching. I knew it was the Burnout Academy. I knew it was the talking. I knew it was through my books and my blogs and podcasts. I knew it was about the burnout education. I knew it was about getting the message out there. But I couldn't find a job title that really encapsulated any of that. People were calling me a burnout strategist. People were calling me a burnout expert. People were calling me the burnout educator, but more often than not, but like burnout expert, it just didn't sit right with me. It felt really dry. It felt really dull. It's just not me. Particularly not if you've ever looked at my website, but particularly not with the colour and the boldness and the brightness that's all over my website. Burnout expert for me sounded quite dull, if I'm honest with you. Sounded a bit grey, a bit beige, a bit boring. And then you go to my website and there's all this brightness and this boldness and the bold text and the bold colours and the big writing. And it's, you know, it's very in your face. And so there was a disconnect for lots of people because actually burnout experts aren't big and bold and colourful and in your face. And yet needed to reflect my personality. It needed to be, I wanted it to be something that reflected my personality. If this was now my opportunity for the first time in my life to almost like create a new identity, a new feel, a new field, not being defined by other people, not having anybody else say to me, this is your job title. And again, you know, I'd spend all of my career to date, you know, from leaving kind of education, going straight into the world of work, I spent my career in HR. Very, very quickly, I had become, you know, I became the UK's youngest HR director, organisation of over 4,000 people. Big salary, big title, board level role. And yet I'd go into a pub or, you know, friends would introduce me to friends of friends, or I'd meet people at stag do's or weddings, or you just get chatting to somebody at the pub and it, but oh, you know, what do you do? I'm an HR director. And you'd see the eye rolling and, you know, some people honestly would like roll their eyes and like end the conversation. They're like, oh God, you just do the hiring and firing, right? Yeah. Oh God, don't get me started on HR. People didn't even want to get to know me. Very few people were actually interested in wanting to get to know me as a person, because the identity of your HR, they thought that was all they needed to know. And for years and years and years, I still see it now on my social media feeds, particularly on LinkedIn, but, you know, even like TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. Right, this is HR's fault. HR did this, HR did that, HR did the other. It's like HR are to blame for all of the bloody, you know, problems in the world when it comes to anything related to the world of work. We'll just blame HR. And yet I could, and many other HR colleagues, not just from my organisation, but HR around the world, we can walk into a meeting and we're the faceless, nameless ones. Finance can walk into a meeting and be introduced as the finance person by name. IT can walk into a meeting and be introduced as the IT person by name. The marketing person can walk into the room and be introduced as the marketing person by name. The CEO, the COO, they all have names. That's how they get introduced. And yet HR is HR. Not Kelly, HR. Not Kelly's in the room, but HR's in the room. Must be careful, HR. HR alert, HR alert. So again, that sense of identity. Walking into a pub, people don't want to speak to me because it's HR. So it's probably no wonder that actually after that first burnout, that whole sense of, because actually, who was I? I'd spent years being told, don't show any personality, don't show any emotion. You know, HR needs to be dead-faced. You can't be seen to be taking sides. You've got to look as though you're completely impartial. Like, don't smile, don't show emotion, don't do this, don't do that. So I'd spent years armouring up and armouring up. I'd spent years almost having all of the colour sucked out of me, all of the boldness, all of the brightness, all of the inquisitiveness, all of the, you know, my curious nature. Just, you know, put on a black suit, don't show any emotion, walk into a room, get called HR, do what you need to do, walk out again. That had become a lot of my identity. And burnout does this thing to us where as we're coming, we're sat in the burnout, right? And we don't recognize who we are in that moment. We know this isn't the real us, but we're unrecognizable. We don't recognize the person staring back at us in the mirror. We don't know what we want to wear. We don't know what we want to eat. Sometimes you're like, what do you want to do? No idea. What do you want to watch? No idea. And most of the time, right, we are highly capable, highly intelligent people. We've been the decision makers. We've been the protectors. We've been the influencers. We've been the people that have been able to take charge and take action and get stuff done. Like anybody, like you get, you know, people want shit doing, call on Kelly. And then all of a sudden you are this unrecognizable kind of numb person, totally unable to even make a decision. Like, what do I wear? What do I want to do? Who do I want to be? No idea. But I don't want to be this person. I want to go back to who I was. But there's also this kind of then inner conflict, isn't there? Because you desperately want to go back to who you were. And yet at the same time, you can't go back to that person because that version of you got you to burnout in the first place. So if you were that person again, chances are you're going to end up at burnout again. And you can't end up at burnout again. Something needs to change. So I don't know who I am right now. But I feel lost. I feel empty. I feel numb. I want to be back to who I was because that version of me was successful. That person of me was the six-figure exec level HR director working for a big brand, speaking on stages all over the world, doing all the stuff that needed to be done, right? That was me. So I want to go back to being that person. But if I go back to being that person, I'm going to end up at burnout again. So, but I also wasn't being me as that version of me because I was shrinking and my colour had been stolen and my personality had been stolen. I wasn't able to be my true self. So actually, who is the true version of me? But I also don't know how I move from being who I am right now. I don't know where I get to. I don't know how I become something or somebody else. And this is the bit really that I want you to focus on as we kind of start to like end, you know, near the end of today's episode. This is the bit that I really want you to pay attention to. And it's that you now get to choose. Because it doesn't actually matter where you've been. It doesn't matter who you were. It doesn't matter whether you had the big brand behind you. It doesn't matter about the big job. It doesn't matter about any of that stuff. Who you are now, what you do now, you now get to choose. And you get to choose whether you stay here as this person, as this version of yourself, doing what you're doing, being who you're being, showing up as you're showing up. You get to choose that now. And you get to choose whether you stay as this version or whether you want to go and create something else, a different version. But this is blank sheet of paper time. And burnout, again, it does this thing to us. Like we have to, it's not just about learning who to be. There's a hell of a lot of unlearning that we have to do when we start coming through the other side of burnout. Like unlearning all of the masking and the hiding, unlearning all of the armoring up that you have to do because you've been told that the version of you that you were wasn't good enough or wasn't big enough, or that you needed to not show personality, not show you any emotion, that you needed to dress a certain way, that you needed to act a certain way, that you needed to think a certain way or be a certain way. So you've got to start stripping all of that off. I didn't realise, I suppose, how many layers of armour that I was actually wearing. I do think, you know, kind of every so often, maybe a few times a year, maybe once a year. But it's almost like I have this, I don't even know how I describe it, but it's almost like I have this exhale every so often, right? And it's like, oh, that's another unlearning done. That's another thing let go of. Like, even now, I'm 12 years out from that first burnout. In January, it's going to mark 13 years since the physical signs of burnout first started to take hold of me. 13 years. And I'm still unlearning. And I'm still shedding. And I'm still letting go. And every time another chink of that armor comes off, it's like, oh, there's another bit of me there. There's another bit of my real identity. Actually, do I want that part of me, or like, do I want to create something else? Like, who do I want to be? Because I get to decide now. You get to decide now. Do you want to be an author, a speaker, a CEO? Do you want to get to director level? Do you want to be a coach? Do you want to create your own category, like I have done, right, of burnoutology? Do you want to be a category creator? Do you want to be leading the field in something? Do you want to work part-time and chill out a little bit? Do you want to see how it feels to let go of feeling like you've got to be perfect all the time? Maybe try that in a little bit for size. Do you want to go on retreat? Do you want to carry on doing what you're doing? Do you want to do what you're doing and just do less of it? Do you want to go big? Do you want to go small? Do you want to hibernate? Do you want to take over the world? Do you want to tour the world? Or are you happy sat at home on your sofa? You get to choose. Burnout definitely masks all of that identity. The version of you that you became, or that your clients become as a result of burnout, can feel really alien. And this inner argument of who am I, who was I, who do I want to be, all of that feels really, really hard. And yet we don't have to stay in that place. So whether you're coaching people through burnout, or you are somebody that has been at burnout, where you've been isn't where you're going. It can be. And maybe you can sit with that fear and sit with the, I'll reach burnout again, and I've got, or you get to choose, blank sheet of paper. Who do I want to be from now? Who do I want to be today? Who do I want to be in the world today? Because it doesn't have to be who I want to be 5 or 10 years from now. I don't know where I'm going to be or who I'm going to be 5 or 10 years from now. Basically, I think I spent probably my entire corporate career just got, I want to, you know. We get asked that as well, don't we? Where do you want to be 3 years from now? You know, I'm going to have done another two promotions. Where do you want to be? Another two promotions. Where do you want another two promotions? I want to be global HR director. I want to be CEO. I want to be doing this. I want to be doing this. I want to be, I don't know right now. Today, I just know I want to keep growing the academy. I want to keep coaching. I want to keep educating on burnout. And if a month, 3 months, 6 months from now, that doesn't fit with me anymore, then I've got the opportunity to create something else. But underneath all of that is the real me. And I know that what I do, I will be successful at regardless. I know that when we unstrip all of that masking and all of that armor, I do know that the version of us that's left is genuinely the real version of us. And it might feel a little bit battered and a little bit bruised. Might need to do quite a lot of rebuilding. But I know that underneath all of that heaviness, underneath the weight, underneath the mask and all of the armor, what's left is the real us. And we get to choose what we change or keep, what we want to do or not do, who we want to be or not be, how we want to show up or not. We get to choose that. But we can only do that when we accept that the identity of who we were pretending to be is what got us to burnout in the first place. Not who we really were, but who we were pretending to be. Let the weight of that go. And that's how we start to implement the change. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. If you know somebody who might find this useful, give it a share and maybe give it a comment or a like. Let's get more of this message out there. This is going to be our final podcast for 2025. I want to say thank you, whether you're new or old, regular listener or not. Thank you very, very much for listening. 2025 has been bloody tough for me. Don't know about you, but definitely for me. And you know, I've got no interest in smashing the rest of the year. I've got no interest in pushing myself to breaking point for the end of this year. But I'm definitely leaving 2025 with just an enormous sense of gratitude. A sense of gratitude for still being here, for being alive. That's a starter. A gratitude for the work that I get to do. A gratitude for all of you, whether you work with me or not, whether you know me in person or not, for every single one of you that listens. I'm just eternally grateful that you show up every week for whatever reason and keep doing this. I started this year genuinely not knowing if I would make it this far. Didn't think I would survive 2025, and I'm here. And I do know that when I am fully recovered, 2026 better watch out, because I'm definitely coming back even stronger next year to stop burnout. That doesn't mean doing more work. That doesn't mean I'm pushing myself to breaking point, but I'm going to get more vocal. And so thank you for being part of this, right? Thank you for just being part of this movement, part of this community. So thanks very much for being here throughout 2025. As I said, do take a look out for this week's blog that will be live on Thursday on the website, kellyswinkler.com, and also over on LinkedIn and where else did I say? Substack. Whatever you're doing, however you end the year, whether you celebrate Christmas or not, whether you look forward to it or not, I want to send you the biggest love, lots and lots of hugs. Thank you very much for being here. And I will hope to have you back and listening to Burnoutology, the podcast, again in 2026. Take care for now. Bye-bye.